Chapter 4, Day 255. Theda MAB South, 0800.
I'm reporting as ordered, Darrow told the Navy guardsman under the adamantine portico. The guardsman looked at Darrow's docket wafer and nodded him through. From the outside, operations could have been mistaken for a ministerium chapel built in the muscular early ornate style. But the many soaring spires and finials were copper and electrophyte-sleeved detector columns. The braced flying buttresses housed pneumatic blast dampers, and where stained glass windows might have glowed, there were deep shutters of lorricated steel. Operations dominated the north end of the field area, surrounded on three sides by metal forests of vox masts, Auspex towers, and modar arrays, where the ground was baked dry and the air smelled cancerously of ozone and electromagnets. Inside, a vaulted and soaring atrium, lit by caged lumen strips, led to the various control areas. Men and women in the dark uniforms of Navy and the Departamento Tacticus bustled to and fro. Vox announcements called for detail rotations. Darrow followed the enamel wall signs and made his way to a busy staircase that led underground. The main part of operations was buried in deep rockcrete bunkers below the ground. Down below, it was cool, and the air was damp and recirculated. He shivered and wished he'd worn his flight coat, despite the hasty patching he'd made to the sleeve. There was a series of blast doors and another checkpoint, where he had to wait in line under the eyes of three burly guardsmen, while a munitorum servitor checked his papers, conducted biometric tests, and issued him with a duty pass. To Darrow's surprise, Eads was waiting for him at the main hatch.
"Reporting for duty, sir," Darrow said, saluting.
"Call that a salute," Eads said. "Welcome to operations, Darrow. Stick close by me today as you learn the ropes. Don't be afraid to ask questions. There's a lot to know. If I need you to shut up, I'll tell you."
"Yes, sir."
Eads turned and used his sensor cane to trace a path into the chamber. Darrow walked with him.
"Expect to be referred to as Junior Darrow, even by me. You're not a pilot cadet down here, you're a junior assistant flight controller."
Darrow was about to ask a question, but Eads reached out and squeezed his wrist. They had just entered the chamber, and a hush had fallen. Darrow gazed around him. Central Operations was a vast rotunda, three floors deep. There were two tiers of consoles around the walls, the upper one accessible by an iron walkway. These console stations were manned by Navy operators, some of whom were servitors plugged directly into the interface sockets of the displays. Above them was an observation deck where senior officers gathered to look down on proceedings. In the center of the chamber was the principal hololithic display, which projected a flickering tactical animation 6 meters into the air from a wide, brass-edged base unit. Around that stood a ring of semi-opaque glass screens onto which the modar returns were projected. A stern-looking placement operator stood ready at each screen, with a stylus in one hand and an eraser in the other. Around them lay a further ring of primary control consoles, massive codifier stations that sprouted from the floor like standing stones. Each one, panelled with wood, its instruments turned in brass, had its own valve screen PIC display and hololithic repeater. All the personnel present currently stood or sat silently, heads slightly bowed. A rector from the Navy chaplaincy, imposing in his selpic blue robes and sable ruff, was intoning a rite of blessing upon the station. As he spoke, one hand on his breast, the other tucked behind his back, tech priests moved around the room, anointing the stations and offering holy water from gold ampullas to those personnel in need of personal benediction. Darrow noticed most received it, even the higher-ranking staffers.
"Let this day be profitable and successful," the rector said. "Let the strength of will and the clarity of sight that is the province of the most high and glorious Imperator, he that is the God-Emperor of all mankind, inform your work this day. May his glory be everlasting and his beacon of enlightenment shine to us all in the darkness. For the golden throne, everlasting, and in his name's sake, let his will be done."
The rector made the sign of the Aquila across his breast, and everybody did the same. The deck officer stood, nodded to the rector, and announced,
"Day shift begins, 255-773.M41.
At once, activity resumed. A sudden wash of voices, of unmuted vox channels. Deft hands chattered over metal keys. Eads nodded at Darrow to follow him.
As a flight controller, Eads's station was one of the primary control consoles. Darrow helped him into the high-backed seat and stowed the sensor cane where Eads could find it. "Principal cortical plug and tech reader link, please," Eads said as he settled himself. Darrow glanced around and unhooked the two leads from a bracket on the console's side. He handed them to Eads. Eads read the raised identifier stamps on the plugs with the tips of his fingers, then inserted the cortical plug into the dermal socket behind his left ear. The other lead, from which withered parchment labels dangled, went into a second dermal socket under his hairline at the base of his skull. Eads winced slightly as it went in. The console came to immediate life. The hololith display lit up and began to rotate. The PICT screen shimmered into life, showing a scrolling menu of tight-beamed data. Darrow knew that Eads was now seeing all this for himself, in his mind. Eads began to review the details. Darrow looked around again. Each of the flight controllers was attended by at least one junior aide. All of the other controllers were sighted, although one had bulky augmetic optics, but many had enhanced their overview with cortical links. "Vox mic, please," Eads said. Darrow unhooked that too, played out the flex, and helped Eads to fit it around his ear so the bead was in place and the wire stalk set by his lips. "This is Eads, 7513, Eads said softly. "I am now on station." He was answered by a murmur of Vox responses. His fingers began to glide over the mechanical keyboard. The data on the screen altered. The cortical plug was simulating a version of the console in Eads's head so he could operate it. "Climate plot, please," Eads said to the link. A swollen 3D image bloomed across the hololith. "Tactical and quadrant operations. More changes. More overlays. Hard yellow lines showing aircraft tracks, dotted red lines of mission sequences, winking green runes positioning the machines themselves." "There's a spare head, sir, if you want to listen," Eads remarked. Darrow took the opportunity. What he heard as he wired up was a nonsense of human and machine voices, digital transmissions, and binary codes and atmospherics, which sucked and roared behind the voices. "Use the dial there to select," Eads pointed. "It'll seem overwhelming at first, but you'll learn to differentiate and fine-tune. For the next 2 hours, we're assigned flight control for two fighter units, Umbra Flights 4-1 and 4-2. There are the mission parameters on screen." Suddenly nervous, Darrow read the details, trying not to miss anything. "Two intercept units, four machines in each. Routing down across the peninsula to the headwaters of the leader, hunting intruders. Time of launch, 08:15. He looked at the brass chronometer mounted above the console top. It read 08:14. Theda MAB South, 08:15.
"Straps tight,"
Rackley shouted, barely audible over the rising howl of the fan jets. Mackwell nodded. Rackley gave him a finger and thumb O, then ordered the ground crew clear. They jumped off, the last of the hoses disconnected and stowed, rolling the primer cart back. One fitter carried the yellow boarding ladder away. Perched beside the cockpit, Rackley tapped his ears and mouth. Mackwell nodded again. He keyed the Vox.
"Test, test," he said. "Umbra 8, Umbra 8, am I loud?"
"Umbra 8, this is lead. You're loud and live. Okay there, Mackwell?"
"Yes, ma'am. Lights are green. I repeat, green. Ready to lift."
"Stand by, 8.
Mackwell made the sign of the Aquila, then looked up at Rackley. He showed him a thumb. The chief fitter grinned, saluted him, and closed the canopy. Immediately the sound changed. The wail of the jets was dulled, but Mackwell was suddenly contained in a resonating box of ultrasonic vibrations. Mackwell checked the canopy lock, then made a gesture almost like a genuflection to his chief. Rackley saw it, nodded, then jumped down and hurried over into cover behind the revetment wall of the pad enclosure.
"Umbra 8, locked and ready."
"Got you, 8.
"Umbra 10, ready."
"Umbra 7, fit."
"Stand by,"
Jagdeer said again.
4-2 are lifting out ahead of us."
There was a warble of voices across the Vox channel, then a wailing rush that was loud even with the canopy down and helmet on. From hard stands nearby, four Thunderbolts hoisted themselves up vertically into the air. The space beneath each one was a heat-distorted wash of vectored thrust. Blancher, Ash, Cordial, and Ranfrey. Umbra 2, 4, 11, and 12, respectively. On Blancher's expert lead, they began to climb and move forward as their vectored ducts gently swung around. In neat formation, they rose, gaining speed.
As they crossed away down the length of the field, their primary exhausts lit up hot and yellow as full thrust switched through them. Already, they were receding, climbing higher, accelerating.
"Operations, this is 4-1 Leader," Markwell heard Jagdeer say. "Permission to rise?"
4-1 Leader, this is Operations. You are cleared for immediate launch. Good hunting.
4-1, this is Lead. Let's go.
Markwell opened the throttle and felt his machine quiver, as if it had become enraged. Maximum thrust. He felt the gentle wobble as the smear left the stand. Even though it expended masses of fuel reserve, Markwell preferred vector takeoffs. He hated ramp launches and the bludgeoning smack of the rocket boost. He was thankful that no ramps had yet been erected at Theta. He glanced around, compensating for the wallow of his rising bolt. To his left, Umbra 10 was coming up. Markwell could almost hear Zemek fiddling with his rosary of lucky charms as his bird rose. To his right, Jagdeer lifted to vertical, and Clovin, 2 stands down from her. 40 meters up, perfect station keeping.
Wait for it,
Jagdeer's voice cautioned. Blancher favored the slow, gentlemanly climb from vertical to full forward, but Jagdeer preferred the hammer start. The fitter crews knew it. They'd already hit the bunkers.
Wait,
50 meters.
On me.
Extend, full thrust, Jagdeer ordered. Her machine roared forward, crossing the field at 50 meters, ducked, violently thrown to level flight. Clovin gunned after her, then Zemek. Markwell nursed his throttle and then bulleted after them. The ground shot away underneath them like speeded-up picked images. The punch kicked Markwell back into his seat. At full burn, they'd cleared the deadlands beyond the field and had already reached close to 600 kph before they formed up and began to rise.
4-1 Leader, we have cleared the field, climbing now to 5,000, heading southwest 1084.
1084, copy Leader,
Operations replied.
Nice launch. Maybe you can apologize to our eardrums later.
Copy that, Operations. Fast up, fast away. That's the way we do things where I come from.
Understood. What else do you do where you come from?
We kill bats.
Copy that, Leader. Good to know. Make your level 9,000 and turn southwest 1185.
1185. Understood. 4-1, check in.
417, on your lead.
4110, at your heels to port. Nice day for it.
Clear as a bell, Zemek. Count your lucky charms.
Markwell adjusted his mask.
418, right with you. Stay close, Markwell. This is going to be a breeze.
It was. He knew it was. He was going to make sure it was. He'd screwed up on his virgin outing. He could still see Perz Esper sitting in his cockpit, blood on everything. The image was in his dreams and his waking thoughts. But Jagdeer hadn't given up on him. He could do this. He was Fantine. He wasn't going to screw up a second time. Natrab Echelon Eerie, Interior Desert, 0816. Barbed limbs glinting in the fierce light. The slave servitors carried him out onto the foredeck of the Eerie in his burnished litter. His pearl-white machine sat in its launch cradle below him, the desert light winking off its stark lines. The servitors were moaning a litany of providence and blood hunger. Flight warrior Krell Cass Obercon smiled. The litter came to a stop. Obercon disconnected the heavy golden pipes that linked his body to the carriage's life support and slid his helmet down into place so that it locked. He pulled back the silk drape and stepped out onto the sunburned deck. Tall, lean, encased from throat to foot in glinting black grav armor, he raised his spidery arms, and the slaves fell to their knees. The sun was still low in the sky, and the platform beneath his feet rocked slightly as the massive land carrier trundled on over the dunes. Obercon waved a skeletal hand, and one of the servitors ran up with his speaking cone. Engraved and ornate, it was a bell fashioned from solid gold, mounted on a bronze stand. Obercon took hold of the dangling lead and plugged it into his larynx socket.
Fifth echelon,
his digitally corrupted voice boomed out over the upper and lower launch decks.
You who are of the Anak, so sworn to he that is Sek, heed me.
All along the burnished decks of the carrier, the flight warriors of the fifth echelon stood to attention beside their cradled machines. Their litter-bearers were retreating into the blast cavities.
The Anak wills us, so we obey. Who shall find blood in the air? We will,
the flight warriors howled back.
Who will make the kill? We will,
the decks shook.
Who will stain the earth with the enemy's life? We will. To your machines, your chieftain commands.
Raising a bloody cheer, the flight warriors clumped to their waiting bats. Urbicon plucked out the speaker cord and walked over to his Hellraiser unsupported. He insisted on doing this, even though he could last less than 10 minutes without full life support. It was a show of personal strength that the crew admired. Servitors lifted him into his cockpit, and automated systems linked him in. He breathed more easily again once the Hellraiser's augmetics took over the maintenance of his life. The spinal plugs engaged. The systems came to life, feeding their data of fuel tolerance, payload, and energy into his cortex. His eyes saw through the guns now. The canopy closed, shutting him in darkness. Displays lit in his head.
Clear,
he ordered. A whining began, rose, exploded.
Launch,
he commanded. The ion catapults rose to power and discharged. The pearl-white Hellraiser fired off the carrier deck into the sky. Only his grav armor prevented Urbicon from being crushed into his seat. Behind him, like darts from a bow, 20 more machines launched into the desert air, some crimson, some mauve, some silver, some black. They formed up around him as he turned west, towards the mountains. Urbicon switched to his rear picked relays and watched Natrab Eerie fall away behind him. The scale of it always delighted him. A leviathan, fully a kilometer long, bristling with weapon ports, riding across the dune sea on 100 bogies of 5-meter diameter wheels. Such was the might of the Anarch, sworn unto him that is the High Archon, blessed Gower.
Echelon,
he said, adjusting his link.
Let us kill.
Palace Pier, 0912.
You're early, Becca said.
Viltry shrugged.
The sortie was called off. Repairs, you see. Maybe this afternoon.
Breakfast?
Please. I have eggs. You eat eggs, right? Not fish eggs.
No, not fish eggs.
Then yes.
Have a seat, she said.
Viltry wandered over to his favoured table. The cafe was quite busy. Old folk out for breakfast, and groups of manufacturing workers chasing a hot meal after their night shift. Outside, the sky was spare and pale, a strong wind chasing the clouds out of the air. The sea was dark and moody, rolling with white horses. A good flying day.
You know him? Asked Latrice, dubiously. Who? The mental case. The flyer.
Yes, said Becca, turning the skillet.
He's okay.
Over the leader, 10:01. They got the call from operations about 20 minutes before Jagdeer was going to throw it in for the day. Relief flight under attack. Urgent support requested. According to the grid plot, the Fuss was less than 15 kilometers south of them. Jagdeer immediately instructed them to crank to max and burn away down the valley. She called in Blanche's four as support. His unit was coming round in a patrol sweep 40 kilometers north. Markwall swallowed, trying to stay sharp. They were at about 4,000 now, and pushing it to 2,100 kilometers. The world was a passing rush. They went over a straggled collection of agricultural stations, then a small town, then a long series of derelict chemical plants. The river basin was stained florid pink and maroon from years of manufacture. Ahead of them, a vast plume of black smoke rose into the sky. His mouth was dry. Gun sights, Jagdeer voxed. Markwell deftly activated and aligned his targeter. Select primary weapons. No mistakes this time. Guns live. Toggled over to the LAS setting. The relief flight had been composed of 6 super-heavy Navy transports, Onero pattern, with an escort of 6 Lightnings, shipping desperately needed fuel out to the retreating ground forces in the desert. Full of promethium jelly and motor oils, the lumbering 6-engine transport were ponderous. Easy targets. 4-1 came in on what looked like a feeding frenzy. One transport was already down, having engulfed a square kilometer plus of the arable valley in its firestorm. The bloom of smoke, fat and black, was what they'd seen on the approach. Another had an engine fire and was dropping badly. At least 3 of the Lightnings had been stung out of the air.
No less than 15 black and crimson bats swirled in and out of the convoy formation, evading the tracer streams from the transporter's turrets. Hellraisers. Before they even had range, Markwell witnessed a jet-black razor roll in and punch Lasfire into the silver flanks of the tail-end Ornero. It went up in mid-air. Bright, like a suddenly lit sun, a massive torus of white flame so hot and fierce no shred of debris survived vaporization. He winced at the glare, blinded for a moment. The vox bleeped. Jagdeer's voice was hard and curt. Four words. Split up! Kill them! Zemek rolled away left, Clovin right. Markwell stayed at Jagdeer's seven until they were right into the brawl, then broke left as she split off. The air was full of dancing machines and streamers of contrails, exhaust and smoke. Too many objects to track. He had to stay focused. Concentrate on the bats. Not even all the bats he could see, just the ones his speed and angle had a chance of intersecting. Two to port, going the other way. No point even thinking about it. Another, bright red, climbing hard. He wouldn't catch it. There, at his ten. No, a lightning, sun glinting off its aluminoid skin as it turned. Keep jinking, keep moving, keep twisting, keep dancing. Fly straight for more than 5 seconds and you might as well paint a target on your ass cheeks. Hexan, his aged instructor back at the Skolam. His mantra, his words. Markwell could hear the old bastard saying them. A bat there. He rolled over on it. No good, it was breaking and turning the other way. Damn it, another. But Clovin was on it, the nose of Umbra 7 lighting up with las discharge. A hit? Too late to see. Markwell had gone over, passed, round again. That put him low under one of the transports. The damn thing's turrets opened up at him, chasing his tail with yellow tracer. Friendly, 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 he yelled into the vox, knowing they probably didn't care. Terrified beyond measure by now, the gunners were blazing away at anything in the sky. He banked around again, and a crimson bat went across his nose. Without even thinking, he clenched his thumb and felt the smear shudder as its guns lit off. Had he hit it? Chances were low. He didn't care. There was another. He was in the game now. Jagdeer couldn't see Markwell. She couldn't worry about that now. This wasn't the place for nursemaiding. They were desperately outnumbered, by machines every bit as fast and heavyweight as the Thunderbolts. Her initial stooping dive and turnout had brought her clean in on a bat, but it had the edge on power because she was turning, and zipped out of her target field before she could fire. She kicked the rudder round and rolled to port, and saw a scarlet razor streak by underneath her. It was gunning for one of the lightnings, stuck to its six. The Navy plane was doing everything it could, but it wouldn't shake off. Jagdeer almost had to loop to line up. The angle of deflection was poor, so she saved her shots, and banked around again until she came up right on the razor's tail. It must have seen her there, because it broke off furiously. But her instinct was as keen as ever. Jagdeer had a natural talent for anticipation. A simple matter of logic, that's how she saw it. She regularly guessed what a hostile was going to do by imagining what she'd do in its place. Blanchard once remarked that if it was such a simple trick, why could no one else in the wing do it quite so well? As the razor pulled off, she was pulling off too, at exactly the same angle. Two bursts, four las rounds. All four went straight up the razor's intakes, and it blew apart in a sizzling cloud of debris. Small parts of the wreckage clattered off her upper hull as she came through the flame cone. Immediately, she had a lock tone, something on top of her. Tracers sailed by, pink and bright. She rolled, with a touch of viff from the vectors, and let the bat go wide. Another one. No, two. One red, one mauve, sweeping in towards the transport with the engine fire. The massive Ornero had been holed badly, weeping torrents of fuel mix out into the air. No, you don't, she hissed. She cut round, crunched by negative G, grunting out of her defensive grip posture. The angle was bad, but she let go anyway. A long, pumping stream of las cannon. The red razor lost part of its starboard wing and went into a savage spin, falling away. The mauve one broke off, turning down and out at the limit of pilot tolerance. Then it exploded. One large blast that skewed it around in the sky. Then two smaller ones that shredded what was left of it into metal dust. Millen Blanche's bolt ripped past under her. 4-2 had joined the fight.
Theda MAB South, 10:07. A curious hush had fallen across the operations rotunda. Eads was the only flight controller who had birds in a fight. maintaining their own watches, the other controllers were looking his way. Darrow felt like they were in the spotlight. The deck officer had come over to stand at Ede's side.
Status?
4-1 and 4-2 have engaged. 16 confirmed hostiles. 4 hostiles now show as killed.
There was a murmur around the room.
Relief flight situation? Asked the deck officer.
His name was Banzi, a short, jocund man in a high-collared uniform of imperial purple.
2 tankers lost. 1 damaged. 3 escorts downed.
Ede's voice was frail and distant. He was looking ahead of him into open space, the data swirling in his mind. His hands crept over the console displays, correcting, rewriting. The placement officer at the MODAR screen in front of Ede's station was making constant adjustments to the glass with her stylus. Darrow realized why the air in operations was kept so cold. There was no chance of getting dozy or slack. No chance of drowsiness clouding judgment.
Assessment, Banzi asked Ede's.
Tight. Anything in range?
Ede's replied.
Requesting assist, Banzi cried out to the room. Quickly now.
I have the 44th wing, 6 machines, 14 minutes away, a controller called out from a nearby console.
No.
Deck. Too far, Ede's muttered. The 101, 4 machines, returning over the northern Mechanites. 3 minutes, called another from across the chamber.
Tolerance?
Asked Banzi.
They've been up for 200 minutes and have engaged once already. If we instruct, they'll have about 5 minutes of fight in them.
Anyone else? Banzi urged.
Nothing closer than 14 minutes.
Controller?
Banzi asked.
Another lightning just bought it, sir, said Ede's. And can't confirm, but we may also have lost one of Umbra. Requesting commit.
Banzi nodded and looked up, his voice rising to drill instructor volume.
Instruct commit. Bring them in, please.
Darrow looked over at the flight controller on the other side of the chamber as he began feverish activity.
101, 101, this is operations. You have an instruction to commit. Please confirm plot.
There was an answering swirl of vox noise. The placement officer in front of the controller began scribing quickly and expertly on the reactive glass display. Then Darrow heard the controller say,
Copy that, apostles. I'm sure that they'll be happy to see you.
The apostles. Holy throne. Darrow's heart began to race. He looked back at Ede's. Beads of sweat were trickling off Ede's brow.
Confirmation, he said. We've lost one of Umbra.
Over the leader, 10-08.
Where's Cloven? Where's Cloven?
Jagdeer yelled into the vox. She'd just seen a plane go in and make a fireball in the hydro ponds below. It had looked like a thunderbolt.
No visual, Ash replied.
Nothing, called Ranfrey.
Throne, what kind of party have you brought us to?
Cordial screeched. Jagdeer saw him, below and left, turning wildly with a bat on his tail. The air was full of tracer and las. Her own lasers were spent. She toggled to hard cannons and stooped. Something, forked and white, bent across her bows and raced after Zemek's machine.
See him?
That was Blanchard.
Say again,
Jagdeer voxed.
The pearl white bat. That's the bastard who stung Cloven.
Blanchard's bolt slewed in behind her and then rolled away loose. Ash went under him, followed by Markwell.
Umbra 4-1, this is operations. We have assist committed to you. 3 minutes and closing.
Understood,
Jagdeer gasped, the G she was pulling compressing her lungs. She saw Zemek flick out to dodge his attacker. Smoke was pumping from his port fan.
Umbra 10, Umbra 10, this is flight lead. Break off and quit.
I can hold it.
I don't care, 10. Break off and quit for home now.
Copy you, lead.
There was the white bat now, banking over through the tails of a cloud bar. Blanchard was on it, Ash too. As good as dead, Jagdeer decided. She was needed elsewhere anyway. The burning Anero had finally given up. Its fire-damaged wing tore away, and it went down into the valley basement like a meteor. Another bright flash burst. Another vast section of farmland torched. Jagdeer saw the shockwave mash trees, demolish silos, and send segments of plastic hydroponic rafts slewing into the air. A black razor swept over her gunsight, rolling hard, firing on Ranfrey's machine. She hit the speed brakes, her body arrested by the harness, and fell nose down onto it, pumping her cannons. It twisted and turned out as Ranfrey pulled clear. Jagdeer swung around onto it again. Resighting, she got a decent lock.
Bang!
she said. The arcing bat vanished and left a drizzle of fire in its place. Blanchard blinked in amazement. He'd had Clovin's pearl-white killer square in his reticule with a firm tone. And then it had just vanished. He banked hard, expecting a trick. But there was no sign of it.
Umbra four, Umbra four. Did you do that?
Negative, Umbra two, Larice Ash replied. Frigate, Mill. He's dummied you. He's right under you. Blanchard inverted, then curled into a dive. Ash was right with him, popping shots at the merciless white Hellraiser. It stuck and turned and matched every move Umbra Flight's number two made. This wasn't right. This was insane. Blanchard and Ash were Jagdia's two best pilots, aces both. How could this hostile outdance them together? Ash rotated steeply and got a lock, but then pulled her thumb back as Blanchard's bolt got in the way. The bastard was playing with them, playing them off. The Razor screwed off left, then punctured Blanchard's wing with a flurry of hard rounds. Ash scored a shot that left a dark scorch on the bat's right wing. Then it rolled and fired again. Blanchard's port engine exploded. Trailing smoke, he fell out of the fight. The Razor seemed to consider going after him, but pulled away. Ash turned with him, smiling under her breather mask. And he was gone. She switched her head around, looking for it. A las shot tore through her wing. It was on her, locktone. Four cream-skinned thunderbolts came out of the south, nose guns blasting. One rolled perfectly, came in under her, and fired bursts at the pearl-white Razor. It sidestepped and extended at a furious rate. The white thunderbolt swung past her. One of the apostles. He dipped his wings to her. Many thanks, Ash voxed. So certain, so assured. The four apostles ripped into the air fight and broke it up, like bouncers in a tavern brawl. Seacan secured one kill, his wingman Sir another. It was the legendary Quint, ace of aces, who had saved Larice's skin. The hostiles began to snap off and break away from the tumble. Then Ash saw the pearl-white Razor lining up on Markwell. He was chasing one of the fleeing hostiles, firing wildly.
Umbra eight! Break, break! She yelled.
She started to turn. Jagdia's machine swept by her, gunning. The hostile was right on Markwell's six. Tone ping. Hard lock. He couldn't shake it. Markwell shouted in frustration. And, in desperation, Vander Markwell did the only thing he could think of. He fired his Thunderbolt's rocket drive. It was only there for launch assist. No one ever used it in open flight. It was against textbook directives. Fire your rocket, and you lose control. He fired it anyway. The sky and land became a blur. He grayed out for a moment. Somehow he held on. The pearl-white Razor turned, bemused, as its target whiffed at the last moment and went wide.
Yours, Halson?
Seacan's voice sounded calm and controlled over the vox.
On it, leader,
Halson responded. Major Velmid Harrelson, 97 kills. Jagdia watched his consummate skill with humble appreciation. A perfect bank, not too much throttle, totally composed. He arched over onto the target expertly, guns blazing. But somehow the bat managed to whiff out under him and then swung onto his rear. She heard Halson's voice, just a hint of confusion in the calm tone.
I'm locked. I...
Halson began.
Seacan, where are you?
The bat's guns blew his tail assembly away. Halson tried to control his flailing machine. The huge silver bulk of one of the transports suddenly filled his forward view. The mangled thunderbolt impacted into the side of the Onero at 500 kph. The fire wash lit up the valley. Theta MAB South, 10:18.
Apostle down, the flight controller on the far side of the chamber yelled out.
There was a brisk gasp from the personnel around them. Darrow looked at Eads. Eads sighed.
Enemy has broken off. Bats retreating.
Banzi nodded. There was some sporadic clapping. Eads glanced round at Darrow.
A white bat. Pearl white. Ring any bells?
Sounds like the one, sir.
Darrow nodded.
He's a devil of a pilot. A real devil. Summarize everything you remember from your encounter and I'll get the report copied out. The wings need to be aware of him. Everything you remember, please, Junior.
Yes, sir.